Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at wbez.org/events.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Jobs have been growing and the stock market has been soaring, but many consumers don't feel the economy is working for them. Meanwhile, Austin Goolsbee, president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago, says our banks are safe and Americans should feel secure. The Chicago Fed is one of 12 regional banks that ensure the U.S. financial system is stable and serves the public interest. We checked in with him for his take on the economy. We also talked about the history of the Federal Reserve System, the role Chicago plays, and what goes on behind closed doors at his institution, including the 80,000-pound door of the vault. Goolsbee starts with an explanation for why we need a dozen regional Federal Reserve banks.
This is a 100-plus-year-old story that is a tale as old as time, which is to say, in 1913, when they passed the Federal Reserve Act, people were nervous, uncomfortable, as they are today, that Washington, D.C. and New York City would control the financial system of the United States. So they created kind of a hodgepodge system where there is a D.C. component, which Chair Powell runs the Federal Reserve in Washington, D.C., and is the leader of the whole system. There is a New York Fed, which is critically important for that system. And there are governors at the Fed, which in a way, as I say, the governors are kind of like senators, and the presidents of the reserve banks are kind of like governors.
Okay.
And we all get together every 6 weeks for the Federal Open Market Committee, where they meet and vote on the interest rate. But those regional banks are supposed to bring independent views to monetary policy. And that's one of the things that makes the committee effective, I think, is that people are coming from all different parts of the country and have a lot of different views.
Yeah, I think it's important, to your point, to have people outside that Washington, New York bubble weighing in on interest rate decisions.
Yes.
Yeah.
And look, if you're an econ gym rat like I was, the FOMC meeting is just about the coolest thing in the world. You know, they go in and there's a huge table and the shades come down so no one can spy on it. And we go around the table and it's both the opinions from different parts of the country and the as part of what they call the Beige Book process. Each one of those reserve banks talks to business leaders, talks to community leaders, talks to all sorts of different folks, and they bring that not just statistics and numbers. They bring those feelings and how people view the economy. They bring that to the table, too, when deciding the interest rate.
So something I didn't realize before this interview, if you pull a $1 bill out of your wallet, you're going to see a black circle with a letter in it on the left-hand side. You're smiling and nodding because you know exactly what I'm getting
yes.
to. That letter tells you which of the Federal Reserve's 12 regional banks distributed the dollar.
That's right.
So for Chicago, we'll
you
see the letter G.
That's right.
Yeah. Is it true then, you know, millions of cash dollars are run through Chicago's Federal Reserve Bank every day?
Yes. More than that. So one of the things that the regional banks do is provide financial services to we're kind of the bank to banks. And those banks need money for their ATMs. Those banks get cash. There is a vault in the Chicago Fed with a door which weighs 80,000 pounds.
Wow.
And there is $25 billion of cash sitting in that vault.
And probably heavy security.
Heavy security. And there are Brinks trucks coming in and out, hundreds of millions of dollars per day of cash. We get shipments from the Bureau of Engraving and Printing. We also have money machines that count the money, that pull out the counterfeit and the like. So there's a quite an operational aspect to the regional banks, too, that's different from the D.C. Fed.
So for people who want to learn more about the nation's central banking system, Chicago's Federal Reserve on LaSalle Street has a money museum, Austin. So tell us about some of the fun things that you can see there.
Well, the Money Museum, as I understand it, is either ranked number one or number two of free things to do on TripAdvisor.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
I would advise everyone to go down there. It's on LaSalle Street. It's a fun museum. Part of it is the how to catch counterfeit. And if somebody gave you a $100 bill as a present or something, you can – there are markers that you can look and figure out if they're real. And they have demonstrations of that.
Yeah.
And there's some about the history of the Fed, and there's some about monetary policy decisions, and you can test yourself. They give you these scenarios like aliens land and blow up the bridges and the economy's falling. Should you cut the rates or increase the rates?
Yeah, as you mentioned, this is all free to the public, but some people do remain suspicious about a central banking system, which can seem secretive, right? So they worry about how secure and stable the banks are. I want to play a quick clip that explains that a little bit.
Don't look now, but there's something funny going on over there at the bank, George. I've never really seen one, but that's got all the earmarks of being a run.
You're thinking of this place all wrong, as if I had the money back in a safe. The money's not here. Well, your money's in Joe's house. That's right next to yours. And in the Kennedy house and Mrs. Maitland's house and 100 others. You're lending them the money to build, and then they're going to pay it back to you as best they can. Now, what are you going to do, foreclose on them?
Now, for anyone who doesn't recognize it, that's Jimmy Stewart from the 1946 classic It's a Wonderful Life. So I got to ask you, Austin, how do you reassure people that their life savings are secure and that it is, in fact, a wonderful country and a wonderful banking system that we have, and we don't need to worry?
Yeah, look, the banking system is safe and sound. And the first thing to note is there's FDIC deposit insurance, and that's the way we solve the issue of retail bank runs.
Yeah.
That in that setting, if you heard that the bank was in trouble, you'd have to run down and get your money out, because mm-hmm. if you were the last one to show up, you wouldn't get your money. But now with deposit insurance, you don't have to run down there.
Ooh.
And the Fed system itself is the lender of last resort. So the other thing is that banks can come to they call it the discount window in a crisis, where the problem is not that they're insolvent, but just that, kind of like in your clip, the money's tied up in these long-lived assets mm-hmm. that can't be turned into cash money too quickly. You can borrow from the Fed's discount window if you're a bank.
How did this work in relation to like the Silicon Bank collapse?
So Silicon Valley Bank, as you might imagine, there are complications as you get into these things. The question is, as banks start to collapse, do they actually have assets to cover the money that they need in the short run, or are they insolvent? And the typical person who's got money in the bank, it's not like Silicon Valley. And even in Silicon Valley, they're insured deposits. You got to have very big deposits before you're exceeding the FDIC cap.
So there can't be a bank collapse? Is that what you're saying?
If the bank collapses and ceases to exist, you file with the FDIC and they say you had an account and it had this much money and that's insured. So you don't have to go. If you heard that the bank is having a problem, you don't have to go pull your money out, because the FDIC will cover it. That's what the insurance is of FDIC. If you get into the Silicon Valley Bank situation, the reason there was a run on Silicon Valley Bank is you had some big corporate customers who had deposits in the bank that were so large they exceeded the cap of the insurance. So they still wanted to get their money out.
I see.
The overall banking system, even when things go wrong, like with Silicon Valley Bank, we fundamentally have deposit insurance, and the lender of last resort system is well functioning. And the Chicago Fed, if you're in Chicago, come down and see the Chicago Fed, because the regional banks, we're your local Fed, and it's not, I try to tell everybody, we're guardians of the galaxy. We're not the bad guys. Yeah. We're the good guys. We're trying to keep a safe, stable financial system.
Yeah.
And we deal with the plumbing. So a lot of the wire transfers go over the Fed's system, a lot of direct deposit. The Fed started a new real-time payment system this past year called FedNow, which is the first new payments rail in probably 40 years. And all of those things are about, the Fed is about trying to have a safe, stable financial system and an economy that grows and works for everybody. And that's a good mission. It's a mission-driven kind of organization.
Yeah. All right. Let's turn to the current economy, Austin. When Federal Reserve officials met just over 2 weeks ago, they signaled that they expect to cut interest rates three times in 2024. The Fed's next rate decision is going to be in May. So given how the economy's doing, might we see a rate cut?
As we look at what's going forward for 2024, it's worth taking a step back and just noting 2023 was a completely unprecedented year, really quite strange in the history of the Fed, or the, let's call it the monetary history of the country.
Yeah.
In that, in all previous business cycles, if you want to get the inflation rate down, that has only happened with a very substantial recession in the country. That unemployment went up a lot. A lot of people are old enough to remember the Volcker episode where to get inflation down, the unemployment rate literally went to double digits. We had a horrible recession. And in 2023, we had what I was calling, as it was going along, the golden path, where inflation came down, one of the biggest drops in the inflation rate mm-hmm. on record, and the unemployment rate never went above 4%. We didn't have a recession. It was actually a fairly strong GDP growth year. Mm. And
what did you think was happening at the time?
I thought what was happening at the time, and I still think that the reason that could occur, and it never occurred before, was partly that so many bad things happened during COVID that the healing of those bad things, like the supply chain being so damaged, so many people pulling out of the labor force.
Yeah.
Those things healing would open a little window that maybe we could sneak through, and we did. So now as we go into 24, kind of the question is, can that magic continue? And it probably cannot continue at the magnitudes that it did last year, because once the supply chain is healed, it's healed. It's not going to improve as much as it did
yeah.
last year. But I still think there are positives. And if you look at the real economy, it's been solid. We're getting this last jobs number quite strong, and it's followed several strong months in a row. There are still some concerning elements, like delinquencies, credit delinquencies on the consumer side rising. But at this level of restrictiveness,
yeah.
let's call it, where rates are relatively high compared to inflation, I think you gotta pay attention to how long do you want to be that restrictive.
Mm.
If you're there too long, the unemployment rate's going to start going up.
So in theory, interest rate cuts spur the economy. They encourage businesses to invest in new jobs, consumers to buy more. That should boost consumer confidence, and all of this could benefit an incumbent presidential candidate, right?
Once I became a Fed man, I ceased talking about politics, elections, and any of that. So I'm gonna avoid those kind of questions. But I will say the puzzle kind of that you highlighted from your opening was, if it's as good as I say, 2023, the numbers look really fine. Why are people upset?
Yeah.
It's undeniable that they are. And the only things I'll say are, one, remember the Fed's job is the dual mandate. So by law, we have to just look at the actual numbers. We have cared about consumer sentiment and business sentiment in the past because those were always pretty good predictors of what people's spending was going to be. Mm-hmm. So if people said they think the economy stinks, then in this next 6 months, they would tend to spend less. And that broke down. Okay, so the actual numbers implication of how people feel has been breaking down for some time.
Yeah, as you pointed out, I mentioned all those positive economic indicators, but I mean, income growth has struggled to keep up with inflation. So could that be a reason why people remain cautious or pessimistic?
Yeah, it could. And for sure, the price level is higher than it was in 2019.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. The only thing that's puzzling is in the last year, wage growth and income growth has been a lot stronger than inflation. So in a way, you would have thought that it would be showing up more in how people feel. The fact that people's feelings is less indicative of their actual behavior, in a way, has the Fed put a little less emphasis on feelings and a little more on the actual numbers.
Well, speaking of feelings, leave us with this, Austin. Overall, how optimistic do you think that consumers should feel right now about the economy?
On a scale of what? I think
one
pretty
to 10?
Solid. I think we're, if it's 1 to 10 and a normal boom is 9 and a normal recession is 1, it certainly feels like a 7, 8, looking more like a normal boom time in the country. By some measures of the labor market, we were, if anything, over hot. You know, we were growing so fast and the labor shortage was so acute that that wasn't really sustainable. And if you talk to business employers or the workers themselves, it kind of did not feel sustainable. We're getting back into better balance. So that feels like some comfort.
We'll leave it there. That's Austin Goolsbee, who's the president and CEO of the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sasha.
I learned a lot. This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Andrea Guthman, edited by Meha Ahmed, and mixed by Linnea Dominic. For more coverage of the economy, the arts, politics, and more, make sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thank you for listening. Let's talk again soon.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.